Company of One, episode number 36.
Welcome to the Company of One podcast featuring Dale Callahan. Dedicated to helping you find freedom in life and with your career. Learn how to not only increase your income, but take control of the income you acquire. Let's ignite that inner entrepreneur in you. Now, welcoming your host, Dale Callahan.
Yes, and I welcome you to this. This is the first episode in December. I'm sitting here recording this, and when this releases, it will be December 2nd. And so this is the beginning of December in 2013, and if you've listened back to the last podcast, we're talking about planning for next year, planning for, whatever year it is, planning for next year. We hopefully you're partaking of planning for next year, however you're doing that. In this episode, I'm going to do something that was asked for by several of the people on the survey, is talk about some business failures. Now, I'm not going to really interview anybody on a business failure. I could, because I can pretty much promise you there's every single person that's ever done anything in business has business failure stories. So it's not really hard to figure out. I mean, I think it's encouraging to people, as a couple of you have commented, you know, to how do I find out about business failures? How do I find out what a failure looks like? Because everything looks like a raving success, and it's not. You know, that's, you know, most of the stuff that people do in business, and most of you indicated that, or the listeners to this podcast indicated that you have a desire to either start or grow a business, and it's just things fail and don't work out. And failing doesn't mean, hey, we're going up and we're declaring bankruptcy and everything. Failing, some, you know, can mean a lot of different things. And this is one of them. So I wanted to tell a story, and it's a personal story about failing and kind of some things I learned from it. And this one had some serious cash invested. So this one is more of the side that people actually lose money. And we'll talk about that in a minute, but it's the anatomy of a business failure. And maybe more importantly, some things that I did wrong. And that's all I'm going to really focus on, is what I did wrong and what I should have done instead. So we're going to talk about that in just a minute. But first, one of the things I'm going to try to do is kind of break the podcast up. One of the comments people said, again, was in the survey, was to get down to 30 minutes. I think that makes sense. Shooting for that every time. So I'm going to kind of break up and to get to the point faster on some issues. Kind of hard for me, but we'll work on it. But first of all, what's up with me? Since a lot of you will call and ask me, or if email me, ask me where I'm going to be. I do put on the website any speaking engagements I've got at dalecallahan.com. Over on the right-hand side, there's speaking engagements. I'm about to do, on December the 3rd, I will do the last one, at least unless something comes up, the last one for this year. We'll be speaking to the PMI, the Project Management Institute of Nashville. I think we are in the Brentwood Library, and which I don't know where that is, but I'll find out. But obviously, the Brentwood, Franklin area of Nashville's great areas to be in. Actually, all of Nashville. I really love being in Nashville. So it's one of my favorite places to be. So I'm glad to be back up there. I was up there last year at the same time, kind of working with the PMI indirectly. So I'm glad to be back there and doing that. We're going to be talking about leading from a cubicle. So that's going to be a dinner meeting. So if you're a member of PMI in Nashville, or you're just in Nashville and you want to join them, you can check out my blog at dalecallahan.com, look at the speaking engagements, and get a link over to PMI and how to get engaged and how to be part of that. And if you're there and you're listening to this, again, it's always fun for people to come up and say, hey, we listened to the podcast, and, I'd love to hear from you. We're lining up speaking engagements. I'm kind of on the fence about what we're doing on speaking engagements in 2014. It looks like I've logged over 17 official engagements for 2013. That's not including teaching and other volunteer activities. which will puts it into well into 50 to 70 days of teaching and speaking. I'm kind of looking at what makes sense and adjusting that in terms of what our motivation for speaking is and why we're doing that. And we've got some meetings planned to talk about that. But one thing I do want to share is productivity tips. One thing many of you, every one of us, are trying to squeeze more time out of things. So I'm going to try to just add something in productivity tips, because I love hearing productivity tips from you and from other people. And so I'm going to try to share some of them. And so I'm looking, these are tools and tips for productivity and profit. And this is just what works for me. So that's how I've got that labeled. What works for me doesn't mean it's going to work for you. But one thing I do, and I'm a big fan, if you listen to any of this, you know I'm a big fan of Getting Things Done and David Allen's book, Getting Things Done. And I'm constantly taking notes on paper. I've got a digital voice recorder that when I'm driving, I'll take notes to remind myself something. I'll hear something or I'll talk to somebody on the phone. I use Evernote. I've got an iPhone, so I can use notes on iPhone. And in the Getting Things Done philosophy, one thing you're supposed to do is you're supposed to do a weekly review and capture all of that stuff. Well, I've got stuff so spread out in so many different places, and it's duplicated. I'll make a note to myself to do something four different times in four different ways. So I waste a lot of time listening back to my voice recordings, looking back on paper. So one thing I've done just recently is thought, how can I simplify that process? And one thing I'm doing is using Evernote. Since I'm using it anyway, and I realize, wow, on my iPhone, and I'm a big fan of Siri on the iPhone. I don't know what the equivalent is on the Droids and the other devices, but Siri, the voice recognitions tools, but I will open up, while I'm driving, open up Evernote, create a new note, usually by voicemail. And then I will just speak the note. And so it goes into my Evernote inbox, in which then I process it at the end of the week. But it takes my audio and converts it to text. So now I'm not having to listen back to it. I've just got a text note. And I think that's going to save me a lot of time. So then I'll just be reviewing my Evernote inbox and doing that. So hopefully David Allen will be proud of me to reduce my number of inboxes there. So I'm going to try that, and I'll let you know how that goes. But that's one of the things to do is reduce the amount of content you have coming at you. And if you're like me, most of the content you have coming at you comes from stuff that you do. So now let's hit the topic of the week, the anatomy of a business failure. And I'm going to try to tell you a story and try to tell you briefly. And as you well know, if you've ever done anything, that there's a lot of details that are left out. But that's okay. A couple of years ago, I got involved with a former client of mine approached me. He had a business, a technical genius, I'm going to call him. His name is Steve. I'm not going to give you any more details right now because I haven't asked his permission. But Steve, brilliant guy, very optimistic, very energetic, and approached me and said he had this great idea, and it was a wireless telecommunications company he wanted to start, but he needed some backing of some venture capital, some investors. And he wanted me to line him up with some investors. So I agreed. You know, I didn't really care, because if you know, I'd been in the telecom business before, didn't really care for telecom, but I was like, sure. So we all go to lunch, and it was him and one of the people on his that was interested in his business, and me and a friend of mine is a former venture capitalist. And we talked. And essentially what happened, in short, is there was money on the table, $200,000 to be invested pretty quickly. But it depended upon me and the former venture capitalist friend of mine to be in the game. And the way it was worded is, I'll invest if these two are part of the deal. Now, looking back, that guy that said that was very shrewd in his thinking, because he understood that Steve was a technical genius, but Steve didn't have a lot of business savvy. As a matter of fact, Steve understood he did not have a lot of business savvy. He was not necessarily a leader, but he understood he was technically brilliant, a great salesperson, as a matter of fact. And so the two of them recognized that weakness and recognizes they needed some business savvy. And there was the beginning of the failure, by the way. I got involved somewhat reluctantly. I mean, you know, it's always strokes your ego for somebody to say, hey, we want you to be part of this company. And it strokes your ego more when they want to throw money at you every month. So that was kind of fun. But we got involved and our initial CEO took over. The venture capitalist friend of mine took over as CEO. He got busy raising money. I got busy being the operating officer, taking care of operations. But basically, I never really led in that. I yielded everything to our technology guy, the founder. And just, I assumed he knew exactly what he was doing. And this guy, Steve is just the greatest guy in the world. He's just so optimistic, so energetic. He's the guy that talks to you and I won't say he sees through rose-colored glasses, but you want to believe him, you know, and he believes him. He's so confident. He's so sure. He understands this is a weakness he has, but that's why he wanted other people in the team. We didn't necessarily listen to that uncertainty that he had in himself. So we just assumed everything was rocking and everything was good. We were burning lots of cash because we were paying salaries to people. We were building equipment on towers around the city. We had three towers lit up with the technology was WiMAX, for some of you that are familiar with that, which probably is not really being used now, but essentially, we were providing wireless services as an alternative to wired cable or DSL or T1 or telecommunication services to businesses. We were giving them an alternative. And we were early in the game of this wireless stuff. So we were an early player. So we basically lit up the whole city with wireless. We put stuff on towers so we could reach pretty much any business district in the city with a wireless shot. Key mistake number one, by the way. We spent a lot of money, had tower contracts. And you may not know this, when you put stuff up on a cell tower, and these were essentially cell towers or TV towers, when you put stuff, you rent the space. And the space is about $1,000 a month, not to mention the cost of getting the equipment on there. So you're incurring cost. But as we got involved and as we went along, I just kind of went along with the paces and I was whatever and I went along to meetings and, you know, I was never leading in my position. Our CEO, quite frankly, wasn't leading either. He just considered himself, he was the money guy. He was going out to get money. We had nobody selling, but we basically had the city lit up. And this is kind of like you build a whole bunch of widgets and you put them in a warehouse and you're ready to sell them. And that was always my analogy. So we've got a warehouse full of services we can provide, but nobody's moving them out the door. So that's, you know, you could see a plan for disaster right there. What happened is, but our plan all along in this company was to build it up to a certain level and sell it. Sell the entire company to somebody else, let them acquire it. What happened is a couple of months in, and maybe it was 6 months in, we were very busy. We were going to meetings, but the chairman of the board, one of the investors, called me and said, basically our CEO had kind of bailed out and went after some other adventures. And our chairman called me and he said, Dale, I want you to take over as CEO. And I was really, I mean, while you're, you know, it's always fun to get asked to do something, you know, it's ego stroking to get asked to do something, but I was kind of reluctant at the same time. You know, about this time I realized I'm spending a lot of time and energy doing something I never really wanted to do in the first place. But I agreed to take over as CEO. It was essentially a phone call. We quickly moved, me and the others quickly moved to get us up for a sale. We thought we had some potentials to, even though we really didn't have a lot of customers, we thought we had the potential to sell the product or sell the whole company. So we were meeting with some people, and that was probably the only good thing I did. Some you know, company that was bringing in about $100 million a year was looking at buying us to add to their technology base. So all of that was looking good. Now, of course, there's many, many backs behind the scenes things that went on here. But I'm bringing in these people to look at buying us, and they're looking at our towers, they're looking at our equipment, they're meeting with us, and the CEO and the CTO of that company came in and talked to us. Now, that was a very interesting conversation because now I'm in the middle of a venture capital-based, angel capital-based, you know, with investors. There's a couple of investors in the deal at this point. We're burning some serious cash. I'm negotiating a deal between two different companies. I mean, we really hadn't started talking about a lot of money, but essentially, you know, at this point, we recognized the money didn't really matter. We needed to sell. We weren't saying that, but we did need to sell. I had hired a marketing person to help sell, because one of the things to look at selling is you want to have as many customers, as much revenue coming in as you can. The more, when you're looking at buying a company, you want them to have a lot of revenue. We did not. We had a lot of expenses. So as I'm going through this, I'm negotiating this, and I'm trying to, on the backside, increase our sales. And we hired a marketing guy, sales and marketing guy, who was with a big company and was used to selling stuff from a big company to big company. You know, just, and if you've ever been involved in large companies and the way they do things and then gone to a small company and the way they do things, it's very different. You don't have big budgets to operate off of. You can't just do the same kind of things. You've got to go deal in small budgets, small, now small's relative, but you can't just talk about million-dollar operations. And it's a different thinking from a sales and marketing perspective. So the guy we had is a great guy, but he just never really connected with what we were trying to do. And quite frankly, we didn't help him any in that matter. So what's happening at this point in time, you know, as I'm now CEO, and I just kind of wake up and realize, you know, I never validated any of this. You know, I agreed to lead, and I agreed to lead from day one, and I haven't led. I haven't led anything. I hadn't led operations, and I'm certainly not leading as an executive now, because the simplest business practices I had failed to do. Our CTO, being a powerful and energetic and very optimistic person, he was so optimistic, I caught the fever, and so did everybody else. We didn't have cold, hard facts to back up everything he was saying. This is obvious, you know, this is how people are going to buy from us. We didn't validate it. And quite frankly, Steve was expecting us to validate it. Looking back, you know, he was the smart guy in the bunch saying, he was telling us, I'm not a business guy. I'm not a sales guy. So he was hoping from our perspective we would do it. He never said those words, but it became clear that's what was going on. You know, and what had happened, then by the time things became clear to me, that, hey, we had a massive amount of inventory in a warehouse. We were burning a lot of cash. We had burned a lot of our investment just in salaries and equipment and contracts. But we didn't have any money coming in, and it didn't know what the plan was. By the time I got all that in my head, I mean, I was months into the deal too. And I was like, it was like me putting Band-Aids where I needed tourniquets. You know, some serious stuff was going to have to happen, and it may have been too late anyway. So as I was going into the deal and looking at it and trying to engage with these people, these people wanting to buy us, and on the backside trying to get some sales going on, I just realized, you know, it was teetering on disaster. Which, by the way, a lot of this is not an unusual scenario for a lot of companies that are small and they're trying to be acquired. Many of them are acquired or invested in with very little money left in the bank. It's a common thing. So that didn't bother me as much as the fact I realized I had failed to lead. I realized that everybody else had expected somebody else to be leading in the different roles, and everybody else was looking to everybody else to take a leadership position, and nobody was pulling the weight and leading. And certainly nobody had led as a CEO, either the first one, and I kind of was being led as a CEO, at least initially. So what, as we closed the day, as we're trying to close the deal, our CTO and one of the investors, they were family, they were related to each other, and which is also not uncommon at all. He was the founder. And so getting friends and family money is very common. But they were having other conversations, and you know, these things happen. You have conversations on one side, and it starts to conflict on the other side. It became clear that none of us really had control. Even though I was trying to take control, they were starting to get kind of freaked out. So everybody's kind of freaked out at this point, and everybody gets scared. And then everybody's leading. Everybody's trying to lead, but you're leading from different. You never come together and lead together, so you're leading in different directions, or at least maybe not totally different directions, but no clear leadership from the beginning. No real leadership in the second part of this. No clear leadership who was really in charge and what was really going on. And as quickly as the opportunities had come out to sell the company, that door was beginning to slam shut. And the CEO of the company that was looking at acquiring us, he was calling me on a daily basis. We were talking about issues. And I remember so clearly he called me one day and he says, "You know, Dale, I'm getting the sense that that you're not really in charge. That you're not the only leader," to say. You know, in other words, he had put his confidence, for whatever reason, he had put his confidence in me leading this organization. He was realizing I'm not really the leader, or I'm teetering on not being the leader anymore, either because of one thing or another. I'm going to get fired, or I'm going to bail out, or whatever. And so he got scared, and rightfully so. You know, he was he recognized that he was about to acquire a company, and he was looking at us to lead this division of this company. And he realized that, you know, the main thing you acquire in something like this is the people skills. And in the acquisition, he was getting, he was buying disaster. And so he quickly quit calling as much. And you could tell his jovial attitude and not worrying about things kind of quit. He got very concerned and started asking some very serious questions. So, you know, that opportunity had come to us very quickly, and very quickly it was fading away as we were grasping at straws to capture it. You know, and I look at this, by the way, the people who had invested in the company and all the people that were involved in the company, when you go back and talk to them, all of them would say this was not a failure. Okay, let me say that, and I'm going to say that even for myself. We would all say, this is not a failure. The investors lost money. Everything. They would say this is not a failure. And I did not invest in this personally. And this was a great learning experience from everybody's perspective. The CTO, the original founder, he kind of felt bad about it for a while. And I remember explaining to him, I was like, "Steve, you don't. These investors, they knew what they were doing. They knew this was risky. They knew it was a chance of succeeding, and a smaller chance of succeeding than of closing because of the kind of deal. This is a technology deal. Technology deals are tough." But everybody gained so much in what they learned from the deal. And that's an expensive leadership lesson. But the investors turned around and made lots more money elsewhere. They gain their money. So this was, you know, this is kind of like you go out and buy two things and one of them doesn't pan out and the other one pans out very well and covers the case. So I say that very carefully. I want to be clear that when you have a failure in business, it's rarely this distraught issue of failure. It's a, let's rethink, let's close the door on this, let's look at what happened, let's learn our lessons, and let's not do that again, but let's find out where to go next. Everybody who walked away from this is exactly what they did. They've gone somewhere else and done something else. And I think been very profitable where else they've gone, as well as probably had some other string of failures to go along with it. But, you know, it's again, it's like an investing in stocks or something. Who cares if one goes down? What we're looking at is for the entire portfolio to move up. Everybody's managed to do that. But let me just real quickly wrap up what caused the failure here, and I think you're kind of clear on that, is lack of leadership. And I can be critical of everybody else. I can be critical of the initial CEO. I can be critical of the investors, of our CTO. You know, but really, in the end, I can only deal with what I was thinking. So I failed to lead. And when I did decide it, when I wake up, look in the mirror, and realize, hey, I'm in charge, I did not take charge fast enough. Anytime you're put in a leadership position, now I realize it's a dance to be delicate, but you've got to take charge. You've got to get in charge immediately. Now you have to deal with the people issues and the personalities and things like that, but you've got to take charge. I failed to do that. I just thought I was going to walk in and kind of see how things went around. You know, if I was in a Fortune 500 company, I might could have pulled that off. But still, I think when you're given leadership, take charge. Take charge that day. That's the main. When I realized that it was almost too late to fix the thing, and it may have been too late anyway. It may have been too late the minute I got my hands on it to fix it. So here's what I think I should have done in the first place. Number one, and I'm just looking back, I should have never got in. You ever gotten involved in something you just think you never should have gotten in? I was capable of doing it, but I was not 100% in the deal. My heart wasn't in it. This was not the kind of thing I was passionate about. This kind of activity takes commitment at every level. I was not there. I was along for the ride. The second thing I should have done is I should have trusted my own judgment and analysis. I knew better than to just go along with the paces and not ask the tough questions. I knew better. I should have asked obvious business questions. Let me just give you three obvious business questions that you should always ask. Who are the customers? What do they care about? And how do they value what you offer? I mean, you got to know who these people are, and you got to go talk to them. If I would have picked up the phone and called some of these customers, if I would have just tried to validate Steve's assumptions and some of our other assumptions by calling our customers, I would have realized on day one as an operating officer that our initial projections on pricing and offerings were incorrect. We could have made adjustments on that day under my leadership as an operating officer. But I didn't. They didn't. Our CEO initially didn't. So we failed to lead. So I tell you all this because this is a business failure. Yes. It's a great learning experience. Yes. We're all still friends. Yes. I can look back at this as a fairly joyful experience, even though that has happened. But when I look at all the stuff we did, it wasn't anything complicated. What we did wrong, we didn't ask the stupid questions. We didn't ask the questions your grandma would have asked. We just should have looked at this and said, does this make sense? Will anybody buy it? The rest was technical details. So as you're looking at going into the next year and thinking about doing something, I tell you this for a reason. Number one, it's not fatal. You can fail over and over and over again. It's not fatal. And we close many of businesses that we have put little or no money in. This one put a lot of money in and closed it. It's not fatal. You can carry on. You can go do something. You can learn your lesson and move on. And as a matter of fact, sometimes a failure identifies another opportunity, which in Steve's case, it did. This identified another opportunity for him. But the second thing is, as you're looking at business things, I know a lot of you think you don't have any business skills. That may be true. But you do have common sense. So as you're thinking about something to do, think about those questions. Who are the customers? Who would buy my products and services? What do they care about, really? And how would they value what I offer? Now, we can go into detail and I can help you out on those details. But if you ask those three questions and get answers, and let me give you a hint. If you pick up the phone and call 10, 20, 30, you go meet them, talk to people who would potentially buy your product, and just ask them those three questions. Tell me what makes you, you know, tell me what you care about. Tell me who you are. What kind of business are you in? What makes you want to buy this? And what do you value? If you can get your head around those things, you are a better business person than most people out there. So thank you very much for the time. I hope that's insightful to you to look at that, to look at a business failure. I can bring you business failure stories all day long. And many of them are from people who now lead successful businesses. So take that as a sense of hope. For those of you that haven't done so, if you would, I'm really trying to get in the competition with one of my mastermind group members, in terms of who can get the most reviews on the podcast. I realize I gave somebody a bad link, but if you will give us a review at the bottom of dalecallahan.com/36, you can go and click on the review that's on iTunes and give us a review. So thank you so much for your time. Now we can go out today and make something happen.